Yes, we're on the air. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live from One Bills Drive tonight, and we're talking a lot about the move up the draft board made just 1 week ago tonight by the Buffalo Bills. They went into the draft with the 9th overall pick. They moved up five spots and flipped first rounders with the Cleveland Browns. The Bills were in pursuit of Sammy Watkins, and they got him. We know what the trade looks like. We know what the trade feels like here in Buffalo. How do you think it feels in Cleveland? What do you think they're saying about that trade in Cleveland? There's an awful lot going on with the Cleveland Browns these days, and who better to join us to talk about it than our man, the Browns insider on ClevelandBrowns.com and the co-host of Browns Daily on the radio down there in Cleveland, our old pal Vic Carucci. Vic, thanks for coming on the air with us tonight.
My pleasure, Murph.
Cleveland's like the epicenter of the NFL the last 8 days, huh?
Really has been kind of amazing, John. Yeah, I think that is not an overstatement. It's been pretty crazy. Starting a week ago, as you said, literally tonight, I was sitting in Radio City Music Hall and watching all this unfold and just kind of wondering how it was going to shake out, especially at the quarterback position. I mean, I think this was, as intrigue goes, and even though ultimately a lot of us thought Jadeveon Clowney would first pick and Greg Robinson, to a great extent, the board was chalk. And even with the player or players who were there at 4 or 5 in Sammy Watkins, Khalil Mack, all of that was unfolding, I think, the way we thought. But you know, from every point from the moment that trade was executed between the Browns and the Bills, and I was just stunned by that. I really was. And then to see that happen and then and have the night end up the way it did with the whole Johnny Manziel thing, and that's where the epicenter part of this thing comes in, because I've never seen anything like this, John.
Yeah.
I've been around this game, as you know, for a long time. I've covered it through 4 decades. Nobody like Manziel has emerged from the college ranks in my time of covering this game, and we've both been around and dealt with a lot of stars and a lot of great successes, but this is really been exceptional, and you're right, the conversation has been pretty much Johnny day and night in Cleveland.
On the line with Vic Carucci, who is the senior editor for ClevelandBrowns.com, co-host of Cleveland Browns Daily. If you have comments or questions for Vic about the Cleveland Browns, about the Bills and the Browns and the trade made last week, phone lines are open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Bills gave up a lot to move up five spots, Vic. And do you tell me, what's the reaction to that trade in Cleveland? And anybody second-guessing what the Browns got out of that deal? I wouldn't think so.
No. I mean, in Cleveland, they were extremely happy. I mean, really, to come away with your franchise quarterback, which is what you were drafting when you draft a quarterback in the first round, whether it was Johnny Manziel or anyone else, to hit a clear need at cornerback, which definitely was a Mike Pettine pick all the way. He wanted Justin Gilbert, and he wanted that guy opposite Joe Hayden to play that lockdown thing. And you know how important, how much value that defense places on tight corner coverage. So that was a point of emphasis. So to get that position addressed and in their mind with the best corner in the draft in Gilbert, and then to be able to move down, do that, and come away with that, a franchise quarterback, a first-round pick, and a fourth-round pick next year, that's one hell of a first night for any team. And really, people were euphoric over the big picture. I mean, a lot of it was Johnny-driven, but when you kind of just paused and realized they got 2 first-rounders again next year. They've got 10 draft picks again next year. And it was just stunning.
Yeah. Hey, Vic, the news about Josh Gordon came out, Friday. And I know this has been addressed down there, but would that have changed, do you think, the Browns the fact that they were going to let Sammy Watkins get away from them had they known that Gordon was going to possibly face suspension?
Well, you know, my sense is that they were aware of it going into the draft. No one is able to comment on that, obviously, from the club.
Yeah.
As far as any specifics of the suspension, that's just the rules. I'd be pretty shocked to think that it wasn't known by the higher-ups. So they moved into the draft with a strategy that they stuck to, and I commend them for that. There has been second-guessing over that, to come out of the draft with no wide receiver selections. But, John, the way I look at it, they, again, found a starter in Gilbert, at least it, you know, we'll see how it works out, but I mean a presumed starter in Gilbert. They found a presumed franchise quarterback in Manziel, who could start obviously as soon as his rookie year this year. They found then, and instead of going receiver with their 35th pick near the top of the second round, they went with a right guard. Mm-hmm. And Joel Bitonio, that was a clear gaping need, and you just can't function if you don't have legit starters at a position. And Sean Laval had been there. He's now with Washington in free agency, and they didn't really have an answer to that. And then they went linebacker, and they didn't have truly a starting linebacker or certainly anyone who could cover next to Carlos Dansby, who they had picked up in free agency. So they go ahead and draft Xavier Kirksey, who has really strong coverage skills and was very high in their rankings. And in their mind, both of those players, the guard and the linebacker, stacked up better than any receiver that they saw on the board at that stage of the draft. In my mind, if they were going to get a receiver, it was going to have to happen with among those five who were taken in the first round. They chose to go in those other directions. And keep in mind, Mike Pettine, defensive-oriented coach, you know, you're going to win with defense. Is Sammy Watkins or any receiver you take in this draft going to equal Josh Gordon? You're asking a lot. Gordon had a historic, as you know, unbelievable off-the-charts season this past year and has the kind of talent that you put up there with Calvin Johnson. You're not I don't know if you're replacing that. I mean, I'm saying it's impossible, and I'm not saying Sammy couldn't be everything, every bit of that, maybe more. But the likelihood of that, if you're playing the percentages, you're probably doing a sounder thing, sticking to your other needs and doing what the Browns intended to do, which was address wide receiver after the fact. So today they pick up Miles Austin and Earl Bennett, and neither of those guys would be called Josh Gordon either. But I think you know by throwing those kind of assets and some experience at the position with two guys who can at least get you through, however long Gordon might be suspended, and we don't know. We're just going by media reports on that. At least you've got yourself somewhat backstopped. And I'm not sure, John, again, if there was a better solution in the draft than what they've done so far.
Yeah. Let me add one more thing about the trade. The Bills move up. The Browns move down five spots. You've been around so long. Can I ask you to compare them to a couple of notable trades? You were here in 87 when the Bills gave up a ton for Cornelius Bennett. You're familiar 2 years ago, the RG3 trade when Washington moved up four spots, flipped spots with the Rams and gave up a couple of first-rounders. I think that the Bills-Browns deal doesn't measure up to those two in terms of what was given up. It's a pretty significant deal, but what do you think about that, Vic?
Yeah, it doesn't measure up to those, but it was, I thought, a rich trade from the Bills' perspective. And again, you can easily second guess and say, okay, they gave up too much, but it's not too much if the player proves to be everything they obviously think he is. I go back to that Bennett trade you mentioned, and you know, you knew steadfast how Bill Polian. And walking through that whole, the dynamic of a three-way trade that involved the Colts and the then Los Angeles Rams at the time, you know, there were parts of that that were starting to scare. I remember Martin Levy, as like an extra, I think second got added on into the conversation, mm-hmm. when it started out with first, you might remember that. And Marv was telling Polian and Bob Ferguson, you know, we can't do this. Let's hold it. We're not. This is one guy. Come on. Yeah. And I guess the response was, it's Cornelius Bennett. It's Cornelius Bennett. You've got to make. You want difference makers. So my sense is, even though I'm just making, it's a big supposition here, but I think it's fair to say that Doug Whaley, Russ Brannon, when those guys were in the room last week, they looked at each other and said, it's Sammy Watkins. Yeah. You got to pay a steep price for a difference maker.
Yeah, we'll find out. Vic Carucci on the line with us, senior editor, ClevelandBrowns.com, and the co-host of Cleveland Browns Daily. Tell me about the waiting period until the Browns got to the 22nd pick in the first round and Johnny Manziel was sitting there for him, Vic. Were they sweating it out like when the Cowboys picked up at 16 or when anybody else was picking before them?
Oh, there's no question they were sweating it out. And, you know, their response to this is that it's that you deal in clusters, right? You have multiple players that you want at a particular point, and that's how they were looking at their board as it was moving down. So Manziel was always in their thought process. I think they were looking at other people as well. But at 16, that was a spot that I know Mike Mayock had put, among others, strong speculation that the Cowboys would make the move, that he would be the perfect thing for P.T. Barnum, Jerry Jones. And then when he got past them, I think there was a great sense of confidence that he might fall further. But as I've heard after the fact, Kansas City was picking at 23, and that's where the Browns' intelligence kind of told them, you know, that they had to get in front of them in order to make this work. And I think another team I want to say was Minnesota that was also interested, talking with the Eagles, but basically they had to come from a longer way up. The Browns from 26 decided that, okay, we got to get in front of KC in order to make this happen, and they pulled the trade off with the Eagles, and they're very satisfied, very happy that they did it for multiple reasons. If you know, let's put aside just for a second, and I don't, because I'm about the football like you are. I want to see that part of it first.
Yeah.
But the immediate impact of relevance and business impact, and one stat I heard of many, you know, first of all, that there was a surge, almost upwards of 2,000 season tickets were sold immediately upon his being drafted, that his rookie jersey, his jersey has outsold the combined rookie jerseys of Tim Tebow, RG3 and Andrew Luck combined.
Wow.
So there's been a clamor for these number two RG3. And I was on a Texas radio station the other day that specializes in coverage of the Aggies. And the two hosts were telling me, I didn't have a video connection with them, but they were telling me one was wearing a brown Browns jersey. The other one was wearing an orange Browns jersey. And they adopted the Browns, and they're all done with the Cowboys. That had been their NFL team. And we're already hearing from, you know, TV stations in Texas and radio stations that are planning to cover the Browns training camp this summer.
Wow, that's amazing. What did you make of the report? It had since been denied that the Browns were ready to choose Teddy Bridgewater. And in fact, the card was already written out. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't put any substance in it at all. My understanding was it was always going to be Manziel, and that that Jimmy Haslam, because the report was that Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns, was the one who had told them, no, we got to get Johnny Manziel or whatever, and I talked with him about it, and I talked with others around the organization about it, and on and off the record, and no one said no one told me that that was the case, and to a person it was. That there was no truth to it. And I know a report had come out that some study that the Browns had done had Bridgewater as their top guy. But at least what I was hearing was there was definite, very keen interest in Manziel in the days kind of walking up to the draft, to the point where, I felt comfortable the day before the draft. When I was in New York, I got there a couple of days early, and I went over to the Chelsea Waterside Park where they have the Play 60 event, right, with the guys in town. And I got a bunch of sound from that for our Browns radio show. Well, our producer said, look, we got room for like one good chunk interview. And I had talked to everybody, Bortles, Bridgewater, quarterback Sammy Watt. I went through, we had sound from all the key people. And I said, I think we'd be good with Manziel. So we ran a nice 4 or 5 minute piece with Manziel the day before the game. And, I you never know how things are going to work out. And when I saw the maneuvering, that was the thing. I knew he was prominently in their plans going in. I worked with that knowledge, but by no means, John, did I know you're going to get there and how the trade talks go, because those things change, by the minute.
So Johnny Manziel's been a Cleveland Brown for the last week and already in the news a lot, Vic, including, I guess he was told by the owner that be ready to be the second stringer, and then the restrictions put on out-of-town media today. You better get ready for this Johnny Manziel stuff, probably for most of the year, I would think, huh?
Yeah, well, let's back up to the first thing. Actually, what Jimmy Haslam told us on our radio show, I know he also spoke in Canton shortly thereafter. But we had the Browns Foundation golf outing on Monday, and Jimmy was a guest on the show, and he offered the anecdote of a conversation between Mike Pettine and Manziel that took place last Friday, where he said Pettine told Manziel, "You're a backup, and kind of prepare accordingly. That's how you come into camp." And John, I think that you want to at least be careful with that I'm being careful with that. That is not saying that the depth chart is set for the season.
Okay.
In May. That's saying that, you know, you're going to have off-season workouts and like this is a rookie camp this week, but when they get to OTAs, when the veterans are involved, Brian Hoyer, the incumbent that they have left, would take the first team snaps. But that's how you're starting it out. Does Manziel have a chance to win the starting job as a rookie? He absolutely does. I think preferably you let this guy kind of watch and learn. But that watch and learn model, as we both know, has kind of gone by the wayside through the years. And, you know, we'll see how it works out for Bortles as the third overall pick in Jacksonville. But despite what they're saying, but, you know, I think ideally you want to do that. You want to ease him in. And that's been a point of discussion as far as the national media thing. You know, it's just sensible. This guy can literally do an interview every waking hour and still wouldn't have all the requests covered. I mean, everybody wants a piece of him. You know, there have been staff meetings in the building about managing the Manziel thing and not just from a media standpoint, but community outreach, all the requests you get for charitable donations, autographed helmets and balls and jerseys and so forth. And just like the Bills, you know, the Browns have a whole kind of department that deals with that. And then you have your corporate salespeople with all the various angles and layers that go with that. You have our internal media assets, just like your internal media assets, and how does he fit into that? And then external media, and how are those being arranged and managed? He has his own management team, Manziel does, with media people, marketing people. So you're trying to, you know, have points of contact with those folks, and just, you know, our team president, Alex Steiner, our GM, Ray Farmer, you know, everybody just wants to try to wrap your arms around something that is extremely hard to get your arms around. But, you know, you're not hearing just from sports media. These requests, as you can imagine, come from the Good Morning Americas and the Today shows and the, you know, you name it, the so-called the news shows, the non-sports shows that want to chronicle every bit of this, and then add in the Texas element that I mentioned, and it can just get really out of hand. So the feeling is to be very controlling of it and restrict it. And then I think as time goes on, John, I think you maybe let it up a little more, because the guy will be useless if he doesn't have a chance to learn some football. You know, give him a chance to have some football practice, some meeting time. And you know, I got thinking, as I'm sure you did too, right? 1986, Jim Kelly arriving at the training camp at Fort Irons, right? All that hysteria and all that. And remember all the, what was it, the New York Times and remember various people coming to town to do stories that were more about the city and the area, the impact on the area, right? On Western New York. And you and I think probably spoke with as many of those media people as anyone else did. And it was a bigger story than just football, and that's kind of the thing with this. But again, you got to manage it. I think back then it was easier because I think there was less fascination with the NFL brand as there is now by a long shot. But it was still a big deal then. And however the Bills worked it out, it seemed to work. But I think if I recall, weren't there some levels of restriction on Jim's availability, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, and. Quite frankly, the Browns need a shot of adrenaline. Like the franchise needs that. They've been loyal fans over the years. They need this kind of excitement.
Sure, for sure, John. This here's the thing, though, and you know, and I won't because I will put the limit on my comparison to the football because we're talking Hall of Famer. We know what you know. We're talking the greatest of greats. In JK and what he means. So I wouldn't insult him by trying to make a comparison with someone who hasn't thrown an NFL practice pass, let alone an NFL game pass until we know what he's all about. But he represents, as Jim did coming from the United States football. Remember, Jim was a bigger thing to Buffalo that way than he was, obviously, from the University of Miami as the 14th overall pick, two picks later than Tony Hunter. This kid is that, you know, to the same, and probably that and more from Texas A&M, just in terms of the perception of hope and the adrenaline, everything you're talking about, for a team that is perpetually, you're talking 13 wins in the last 3 years, you're talking perpetual 5-4 win seasons in like the last seven, whatever it's been. So yeah, you know, to generate some hope and excitement and interest, you know, that's what he presents. But it can't just be based on what he did as a collegian. It's got to be, you know, with Kelly, the feeling was that that was going to translate to the NFL. And of course, how long did it take?
I was going to say
four-win season.
Yeah, it took a little while. It took a couple of years, really.
A little bit.
Right? For Jim, it took a couple of years.
Took a couple of years before you took it, you know, before you realized something substantial was working. And in the meantime, there was a coaching change tied in with that as well, with Marv coming along. So here, the coaching change is Petten and the arrival of Manziel, and they're starting out together. And much like that team too, keep in mind, remember the mantra after that first Kelly season was in 87, what should the Bills do to get better? And what were a lot of people saying? Get them receivers, right? Mm-hmm. Get them receiver help. But they said, no, build a dominant defense. And Shane Conlon, Cornelius Bennett trade, you know, all of those things follow suit. And here you've got a team that went into free agency, and its two biggest moves in free agency were to get Carlos Dansby at linebacker, Dante Whitner at strong safety, and the first pick they make in this draft is a cornerback, and along the way they pick up a linebacker and another corner, another big corner in Pierre Desir, who I think is going to be an interesting fourth-round pick. I think he's going to, you know, make some contribution. But Mike Petten's hands are really all over the building of this team.
Browns are going to look familiar to the Bills and the Bills fans when they come here on November 30th, aren't they?
I think so. I think schematically, there's no doubt that with Petten, with Jim O'Neill, of course, as the defensive coordinator, and they're pretty much of one mind. And in terms of the style and how they're being coached, and Anthony Weaver, of course, here also coaching the D-line, and there's a lot of affinity for him. The D-linemen love working with him here, as I know they did in Buffalo. And so I think you're right, John. I think it'll have that look and feel. You know, the only thing I don't know, and I guess I can only hope, is that they could perform at the level that Pet got the defensive front of the Bills to perform last year. I mean, that's the model they're going after, and that's what they think will give them their best success. All the Johnny Manziel talk is great, but this team really wants to run the football. So Ben Tate comes along in free agency. They draft Terrence West as well, and that was an important third rounder that they traded back into the third round to get. So I think the model will be very familiar, and you know, and that's what Mike Petten remembers with, of course, C.J. Spiller and Freddie Jackson, and that defense and trying to prop up a young, inexperienced quarterback.
Hey, Vic, thank you for this. It's been fascinating to watch the last week in Cleveland Browns, and I'm sure it's going to be interesting for you all the way up into the start of the season and maybe beyond. Thanks for joining us tonight.
John, always a pleasure. Love doing it, and sure we will get together soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Vic Carucci, the longtime Buffalo sports writer, covered the Buffalo Bills, now the senior editor for ClevelandBrowns.com.